Appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. Give you a little bit of background. I guess before I go any further, I need to acknowledge my fellow co-authors, Randy Taylor, who's in Biosystems and Ag Engineering at OSU, and then of course my K-State collaborators in this project for the last several years, Mike, Craig, Vic, and John from K-State. This was a joint project that we had done in, I guess, 2007 in 2008 mainly, growing seasons. Most of the data I present will be from Oklahoma because we did see a little bit of difference in our results, primarily due to just the different environments. A little bit of background. Brian did a really good job of explaining some of the problems associated with no-till canola production, so I won't go into those very in depth. But starting in 07, 06, 07, when we really started trying to produce canola on a large scale in Oklahoma, we had a lot of our no-till producers notice stand establishment and keeping the stands through winter. And that was... And a lot of our acres were no-till because those were the most progressive producers, so we had issues. A lot of issues. Some of the earlier varieties and hybrids that we were growing weren't very winter hardy, so that was a problem right off the bat. Not spreading residue at wheat harvest. A lot of our wheat acres are custom harvested, so they really don't care about how they spread or distribute the residue across the length of the header. So a lot of times it was being windrowed or almost windrowed behind the combine. And that presented problems with seeding the next fall or the following fall. And then just a shallow seeding depth. Brian already mentioned that. Going into no-till heavy residue, it's hard to place that seed at a half inch, three quarters of an inch deep when you're driving 6, 7, 8 miles an hour. So that was some of the biggest problems we were observing. The first study I'll talk about here is the main one that we did or conducted along with K-State. Basically randomized complete block with 4 reps. In Oklahoma, we had 3 site years over those 2 years. Basically, our treatments were a conventional till, which was either a disking and light chisel or a combination of several of those passes. Basically, we had less than 20% residue cover on those plots after our tillage was done. No-till, straight no-till, right after nothing done besides chemical burn down, and then chemicals applied during the fallow period. No-till with residue removed, basically we took a sickle bar mower and cut it at just above the soil surface, and then we raked that or piled that residue on top of another no-till plot, which gave us a 2x residue rate. And then also a burn. We burned some plots right before. We planted the day before we planted in most cases. So those were our 5 treatments. Emergence counts were taken 14 days after planting. Well, actually, starting at 5 days after planting, and then every day or every other day up until at least 14 days. Soil temperatures and then winter stand losses were measured. This is a typical site or a typical response we noticed or observed in 2008 at one of our sites. The colors don't show up very, very good. I apologize for that. This is our this 60 above 60% emergence is the no-till, no residue, and then all these others. Conventional till is the next line, the no-till, and the 2x was the lowest emergence. This is very typical of what we saw in really year in and year out in drilled canola stands. We only get about 40 to 50% of our seed to emerge. So very typical. And by removing that residue or burning, we were able to get a little better stand, at least initially. This is stand counts for 2008 in our 2 locations, and a lot of numbers up there. But the thing I want to point out is the no-till. We did see a decrease, especially at site B, a significant decrease in winter stand. or winter survival at that location, but still acceptable. Typically, we as long as we have 1 to 2 plants per square foot coming out of winter, We feel like that we haven't lost any yield, or at least very little yield. But we did see an increase. You notice the 2X residue. We lost nearly almost 70% of our plants going through the winter. So very significant stand reduction there. You'll notice the no-till, no residue. We did lose a little bit, especially at Site B. And really, this was, I failed to mention, this was both of these locations were following 45 to 50 bushel wheat. So we did have a significant amount of residue at both of these locations. This was from our site in 2008 and 2009. Same thing, same trend, no-till, especially the no-till 2 residue, 2X residue, 43% stand loss coming out of winter. Significant decrease there as well. However, we did have an excellent stand. Most of our treatments, we had at least or greater than five plants per foot coming, starting spring regrowth. All right. Another set of data that we collected was soil temperature at the 2.5 centimeter area, around 2.5 centimeters below the soil surface. So, theoretically in that seeding zone. We planted on day, this was from 2007, 2008, fall of 2007. This would have been, we planted on day 273, which I believe is September 18th or 20th, something like that. We observed this every year, and the data was very similar in Kansas. Where we left the residue on the soil surface, we had anywhere from 3 to 5 degrees Celsius cooler soil temperatures in that seeding zone. What that means as far as plant growth and root development, we don't know yet. We still need to look at that further. But really, we maintain cooler soils in that no-till, or under residue up until canopy closure, usually in mid-November. And then things equalize throughout the rest of the year. But the question is that we still haven't answered is what do those cooler soil temperatures mean as far as root growth and root development? This is just a diurnal temperature on day 284. Once again, these colors don't show up very good. This bottom line is the no-till 2X residue. And this would be at 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, where we reached our maximum, daily temperatures. So you can see we're six degrees Celsius cooler at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So that no doubt has an impact on root growth and development. All right, winter grain yield for the summer of 2008 at Site A and B. Site A, really no considerable differences besides that 2X residue. And you'll remember that stand reduction was fairly large at that location. But the no-till performed as well as the other treatments. Site B, same trends held true. Yields are a little lower here because we had a hailstorm a week prior to harvest, so that's why those yields are lower. All right, to quickly summarize the field portion of my talk here, producers have found ways to overcome it, whether it be through burning or a light tillage operation. So we do feel fairly comfortable with no-till production, or at least limited till production. A lot of the small things have made a difference. Planting date, planting on the early side of the planting window and not waiting till later has made a big difference in some instances. Residue management, and we'll talk about that a little further. Cultivar selection, I think may be the biggest thing that we've really improved the last 3, 4, 5 years. When we first started out, we didn't have a lot of the varieties we were using in hybrids were not as winter hardy as the ones that we have now. And that's made a big difference in the no-till production. We thought this was a simple answer when we first started these studies. But the more we got into it, it's a complex issue. It's just not the residue We quickly learned, soil temperatures is definitely a driving factor. And then also bulk density. This is some data from a greenhouse study looking at bulk density and its effect on root growth. Basically, we took a sandy soil and then a silt loam soil and then a high clay content soil and packed it to a known soil bulk density in some PVC columns. And I'll show you a picture of that here in a little bit. But basically, regardless of soil type, is soil bulk density increased, root growth, or root mass decreased? And this was what we were noticing in the field. A lot of times in no-till, especially early no-till fields, the rooting system would be more of a fibrous root system, I guess you could say, instead of a tap-rooted system. At first, I thought it may be just a residue soil temperature thing, but I think bulk density was driving this quite a bit. So you can see, really after a bulk density of 1.5, which we often see in some of our fields in Oklahoma and the rest of the southern plains, a very, very drastic decrease in root growth and biomass. And that's very, very important for winter survival. This is a picture of the columns we put together. Basically, we split the PVC pipes in down the middle and used a hose clamp to hold them together. And then it made sample collection a lot easier. On the left is the 1.3, bulk density of 1.3 grams per cubic centimeter. Middle's 1.5, and the right's 1.7. So it's pretty clear to see the difference in root distribution. And even though it was in a greenhouse, under ideal conditions, we did notice the lack of that defined, I guess, tap root in that higher bulk density soil. That helped us explain some of those differences. Because when we'd go to the field, we would notice that in older no-till fields, I'd say greater than 5 years, our stands were always better than if a no-till field was early on, less than five or, 2 years of no-till, where that bulk density hasn't started to go back down. Those stands were always better, at least in spring, in those older no-till fields. So we're going to continue to look at that a little more in the field. The next thing is something that Brian already mentioned in the first talk is 30-inch row spacing. Which really wasn't, we didn't really think about that until this past year. We had a few producers plan on 30-inch rows, so we did a few trials, a couple on-farm trials. And really, it worked, but from our data last year, we see probably about a 10% maybe loss in yield planting on 30-inch rows. Now, a lot of guys seem okay with that. They say, stand establishment will help pay for that. In our studies, we had several different on 30-inch rows, and we used a monosim planter. Failed to mention that. Set up on 30-inch rows, and we had seeding rate from 2 to 5 pounds. Recommended is 5 pounds currently. The big thing we saw with the plant emergence between the 30-inch and our drilled treatments was that we got on the 2 pounds per acre on the 30-inch, we got 90% of our seed to emerge and establish. As compared to, you'll remember in those other studies, we were at 40 to 50% emergence. So we definitely can cut back our seeding rate and probably get by with that 2 to 3 pounds per acre. So they are saving a little bit in seeding costs. So that compensates for that potential yield loss maybe a little bit. But really in the 4 and 5 pounds and even the 3 pounds rates, as soon as plants started to emerge at those high seeding rates, they started to die off. So it was very difficult to do stand counts on those when you had the canola basically in that 5 pound was planted on top of each other. So my undergrads got pretty tired of trying to count plants in those 10-foot section of rows. Some of the other treatments that we had, the drill 15-inch, no coulter, and then with a fluted coulter or very aggressive coulter that would remove a lot of the residue within the row. So as far as very typical what we'd see, 40 to 50% stand with or without the coulter, not much difference. And like I said, we saw about a 10% reduction in yield going from 15 to 30 inch, but we've never seen any difference in the 7.5 to 15 inch row spacings. So to just kind of tie everything together here, kind of jump back and forth between some of our studies. But seeding depth, you know, seeding depth is always critical. A lot of times early on in our no-till fields, we weren't planting deep enough. The seed was getting placed on just in the residue and actually not in the soil surface. So that's very important. Residue distribution, I think most producers are a little more, or they place a little more importance on residue distribution at wheat harvest time than they used to. And then, of course, planting a winter hardy canola cultivar is very important. And really now we're starting to see a lot of difference in crown heights, which definitely is correlated with winter survival. But getting a variety or hybrid that has that low crown characteristic is very important. And then also burning immediately prior to seeding will increase winter survival as well. Not something that most of our no-till guys are very comfortable with. One of the things we struggle with in Oklahoma is getting that or developing that surface residue. So a lot of guys hate to go out there and light a match and see it all go away. It's taking them 5 years to get that developed. Another recommendation that typically give producers, especially if they're early in the no-till game, is increase seeding rates at least 10%, if not 15 to 20. This is, you know, most of our no-till seeding crops, whatever it is, soybeans or whatever, we typically recommend an increase just because of if seed beds and maybe not quite as smooth as conventional and some other things that may happen. So look at increasing seeding rate potentially. Of course, removing residue if it's with row cleaners or a more aggressive coulter, a fluted coulter versus a ripple coulter. A lot of times you can remove enough residue with that. Plant early in the planting window instead of later to try to get that root system developed. And then maybe perhaps avoid seeding winter canola in young no-till fields at all. And this is based on that bulk density stuff that we did. With that, I would happily entertain any questions if we have time. Yes.
What kind of nutrient management are you using in these pots?
Okay.
Groundbreaker, M, K, S.
Okay. Good question. I failed to mention the question was on nutrients that we used or applied our nutrient management program for these plots. Typically, we're 40 to 50 pounds, usually pre-plant nitrogen. And then P and K soil tests, we didn't have to apply any in either year because it was above the sufficiency level. And then top dress, we came back in late January and applied 100 pounds of nitrogen and 10 pounds of sulfur in each year. So we were aiming for, we were fertilizing for a 2,500 pound per acre yield goal. So good question.
Thank you. In these wider row spacings that you're using, harvesting issues, are you getting good knitting of the stand at maturity? Direct harvesting, I imagine?
Okay. Question was harvesting the 30-inch row spacing. We really have went away from direct harvesting to the most extent to either swathing or pushing. In this year, or last year, last year we really didn't have any issues with harvesting. They were fine. Now, of course, the stems in the 30-inch or stalks in the 30-inch rows, you know, are pretty spindly. You know, compared to a 7.5 or 15-inch row. But we were a little bit concerned about that, but we really had good growth for the most part last year. Now, that may become an issue in, say, a drier year where we don't get as good growth or as tall of plants. But we really didn't run into any harvesting problems. But that's definitely, and something else that we need to evaluate a lot further is variety or hybrid performance in that 30-inch row spacing. because we were kind of choosing a variety kind of blindly on branching characteristics. So we need to evaluate which ones would perform better in that wider row spacing. So, good question. Okay. Question was what drill or what configuration gave the best emergence? Was that correct?
Yes.
Okay. In our we used a Great Plains drill, and typically it seemed like it really didn't matter what coulter we used, if it was a ripple coulter or fluted coulter, as long as you cut that residue. But we with all of our drilled stuff, we only got around 50% emergence. Is when we use row cleaners on our 30-inch planter, we got up to 90% emergence. So definitely the seeding depth control and the residue management gave better emergence. So whatever drill you could get better depth control with, and then of course residue management would be a critical too. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.